Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, the final episode of the year. And as we did last year, we're going to treat this episode as a bit of a summary of all of the news and products and software that came out in 2021. Ben and I were just talking before we came live and actually confused about what came out in 2020 and what came out in 2021, because the pandemic's made it all feel like a mush together 2 year into 1 year type thing. But we're going to first cover some recent updates like we do on the show normally, so things that have happened in the last week or 2 weeks, and then we're going to dive into the full recap, and we're going to have plenty to talk about some good decisions that companies have made and some bad decisions as of recent times. But so good to see so many of you already in chat. Do get involved in the chat. We definitely want to include you a lot in this show, as we always do, and hopefully run some polls as well to get your opinions on the best bits and the worst bits of the year. I guess we should first hand it over to our co-host and check in on his Christmas jumper selection, because I'm not saying that mine's the better choice. Mine is branded, though. This isn't sponsored by Elgato. It's just the only Christmas jumper that I own. But Ben, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I don't have the fancy branded Christmas sweater, so we call it over here. But I've got a red sweater, which is about the best I can do. So happy holidays, everyone. I do have Christmas lights and themes, and that's my way of doing it on stream. But I've been good. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done this, Pete, so I'm excited to be back here for our wrap up of the year. I think it's also our 50th episode, if I remember correctly, correct?
Yes. Yeah, you are right. I'd actually forgotten about that. But yeah, this is episode number 50 of the Gaming Careers Podcast. So I think we both deserve a bit of a pat on the back this year. We've been pretty consistent. Yes, we've missed the odd episode when you've moved house, or, you know, I've been away or anything like that. But Overall, 50 episodes in. We don't hate each other. We still haven't met in real life. So maybe we'll hate each other when we eventually do get to meet up at a TwitchCon when the world opens back up. But yeah, 50 episodes done. I'm very happy with how it's gone. Let's start by diving into this week's news, or the last couple of weeks. As I said, we're going to quickly rattle through this and then get to the big year in review. So I guess we'll start maybe with the news of Discord competing now with places like Twitch, but also Patreon and these membership platforms.
Yep. So this came out, I want to say this was on December 7th, so a little over a week ago. Discord announced premium memberships, which is a new monetization option. It seems like Discord's been exploring a lot of different ways to monetize lately, since they have so many users on the platform now. And this is the newest. I think this is only available for two servers right now that they're testing with, one of which is EPOS Vox. But they're testing out basically a way to be a paid member of the server and get certain perks for being that. Like you said, kind of similar to the idea with Patreon or Twitch of having different tiers and subscription perks that you get for supporting that. So it seems like a pretty logical step for Discord, just to mirror what other platforms are doing. I haven't personally tested it or seen a whole lot of discussion around it since it came out, and it is just a test. So I don't know if, you know, they're trying to see how this will work for these first two servers and then eventually roll it out to more, or if they're really still just seeing if it has reception potential at all. But I think it makes sense personally, and it's a good way to just increase your monetization options as a creator. Pete, any thoughts on this so far?
I mean, the more features Discord releases, the more I think it is actually maybe the next legitimate competitor to Twitch and YouTube in the live streaming space, because they just keep like creeping closer and closer to offering the same kind of thing. So yeah, it's interesting. I didn't know that it was only out on two servers. I thought it was rolling out maybe region-based or something like that. So it's good to hear that EPOS Vox has got an early access to this and see what he makes of it, because I know that he also, I think, uses Patreon, so I wonder if he'll swap to just using Discord. Some updates from YouTube and Twitch as well. YouTube wanted to celebrate, and I actually need to count the zeros on this. Is this one? That's more than 1 billion, isn't it? Is that 1 trillion? I actually don't know how many zeros you need for a trillion.
Oh, you might be right. It might be a trillion. I had a billion down here, but
A billion, yeah, would be right. Nine That's zeros, a trillion. Right? Yeah.
That's a trillion. Sorry. Yeah, 1 trillion views of Minecraft videos on YouTube, which is mind-boggling. That makes a lot more sense why they were celebrating it after the billion.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't think I've contributed to any of those views. I haven't ever watched a single Minecraft video on YouTube, but I mean, that's a huge number, and I think it's still the most popular game on YouTube. Twitch updates wise, one more YouTube update is the new collections of subscriptions that they're testing and rolling out. So you can effectively group subscriptions or people that you've subscribed to on YouTube into different collections, and then you can browse by them. So say you love watching sport and you also love watching engineering videos, but you don't want them like some days you want to go and just watch engineering videos, then you can have a collection for them and put all the YouTubers that make that kind of content into a collection and then watch that, which is cool. I feel like I'm the only person that still uses the subscription feed on YouTube. Like that's what I do every morning is I make myself coffee and breakfast and open up the subscriptions feed and then pop open all the videos I want to watch. And I think everybody else just uses what's recommended on the homepage based on where my videos get viewed anyway. So this is great for me being able to group all the different people that I've subscribed to into different categories. Don't know if you got anything to add on that, Ben, or if we just rattle through to the Twitch news that everybody was whining about this week.
Yeah, I do think the collections thing is cool because to your point, I think I just have so many subscriptions at this point that it's kind of become cluttered, and I think collections could help group that together. So I might use the tab more if I have that option to actually group into what I'm looking for. But yeah, the Twitch updates are the next piece. And there's a couple of those coming through this week. The first of which is the fact that now creators can see why their viewers are canceling a subscription, which was a reason you could give when you were opting out of subscription, but previously you could never see it. It was just for Twitch's own purposes. Now they're actually sharing that with the creators, which is kind of an interesting change. I haven't personally looked into this myself to see kind of what my subscribers are not subscribing for anymore. But I think it's kind of good to have the information if you are the creator. I would imagine a lot of it probably just ties into revenue, right? Like people want to stop paying for it. And some of that you can't really change as a creator. So I wonder how helpful this is if it's going to be majority just people saying, I don't want to pay for it anymore. But maybe there are a lot more uses for, like they have here, viewer schedule as the first example. I can't imagine that's the real reason that someone stopped subscribing, but maybe it is. So I think it's good to have the option if you are that creator. But
yeah, I saw so many people complaining about this, or maybe it wasn't necessarily people that I follow complaining, but I just saw a lot of people talking about it in a negative light. And I think this is good. Like again, it's more information for the streamer. That there's even an option that the user doesn't have to leave a reason why they canceled their subscription. Mm-hmm. But being able to see the reason is useful for the streamer. And I know Patreon do the exact same thing because I used to be a creator on Patreon, and it was quite interesting to look into the reasons why people stopped supporting you on Patreon. Was it, you know, the content that you're producing or the day that you were uploading it, or was it just the financial situation? Like all of those are useful bits of information. It's not to go and harass the viewer that stopped subscribing to you. It's literally to be able to see the reasons why people stop subscribing to you. So I think it's a good update.
The blowback that you saw, was it for that reason? You thought people were going to start harassing?
I can't remember. I just remember seeing a lot of people talking about it in a negative way. I don't really know what the blowback was about. But I've got to stand up for when I think Twitch has made a good decision, because a lot of people in the community just like to talk negatively. And I only like to do that when I think it's reasonable that they've made a bad decision, which they've made plenty, which we'll get into in just a sec. Some updates to Twitch directory as well. Games, IRL, music and creative directories. I think this was actually in particular, it was to do with the creative directory now being back in place with categories for art, makers and crafting, food and drink, software and game development, and beauty and body art. I think we covered this maybe a couple of weeks ago that it was leaked that it was going to happen, but it's now officially live. What else have we got? Oh yeah, another tweet from Zach Bussey showing that the subscriber goals or the creator goals widgets that you can add in Twitch, I recently covered it in one of my YouTube videos as well, has a new option where you don't have to just show total subs or just count total subs in these goals. You can now also change that to new subs, so people that are new subscribers of yours. Which is a good update, I think. I'm just rattling through these because I know how much time we want to spend, Ben, on the year recap. Talking of recap, Twitch recap came out, which is sort of similar to Spotify Wrapped. A lot of companies are doing these like marketing emails where they tell you a load of stats about how you interacted with the platform that year. Twitch does one to show you who you watch the most, which emotes you use the most, and all those kind of things. And there was a bit of an upcry about this. From the big streamer's point of view, it was mainly that Ludwig wasn't included in the stats. And obviously he only left for YouTube a month ago. And he had the subathon this year. So like a lot of people were upset that, you know, he wasn't shown in their stats. I can kind of understand that from Twitch's point of view. Like they maybe don't want to advertise how much you watch a streamer that doesn't stream on their platform anymore. But the bigger complaints I saw actually was to do with the fact that a lot of people didn't get Twitch Recap because they didn't have all marketing preferences enabled on Twitch. So I think if you even disabled one of the options, you weren't going to get a Twitch Recap, which I found pretty comical. What do you think of this, Ben?
Yeah, so a couple things. First of all, did you even get your Twitch Recap, Pete? Because I did not, and I had those things checked, either for streamer or viewer side. I didn't get one.
I mean, my inbox is embarrassingly big right now, so possibly I'm going to try and whistle it down over the Christmas break, but I haven't looked for it specifically. It's not a high priority email that catches my eyes, and oh, I must know which emotes I use the most this year. But yeah, I have heard similar stories, Ben, of people that have all the options enabled in their marketing preferences and still didn't get the email. So maybe it was just an outright bug.
And it's weird that you had to use the email to get it. You know, it's not like this couldn't have been done on Twitch itself in the dashboard or something. I feel like it's just an excuse for you to turn on marketing emails from Twitch essentially and get that. So, and I get why they want to do that, but still it feels kind of bad that if you didn't have that checked at the time, it just gone in the void. There's no way to get it back. Not that it was a ton of crazy info. I'm sure you can find this anywhere you want to go, like Selenium, to find what you watched most and what was most popular in your channel. But I think that leaving out like people like Ludwig and Tim was kind of interesting, especially Ludwig, just because he was so big this year on Twitch. And again, I get why they did it, because he's on YouTube now and it's kind of political. But I feel like he was such a big part of 2021 that feels kind of bad for him. So I understand where he's coming from when he says that. I mean, you saw people who were watching him who had like all his other streamers in his friend group, all his categories, but he was just missing from the recap. So that kind of stinks to see.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think this is Twitch's way of trying to get more people to enable marketing emails with that kind of excuse, because it could just be a notification in your dashboard that you open up. It doesn't need to necessarily be anything to do with receiving the email about it. Last couple of bits just to tie up the news this week before we dive into the year-long review. TikTok released or launched the beta of its streaming software called Live Studio. And this was quite interesting for about 3 hours until people realized that it is effectively another fork of OBS Studio. And then people started to complain in various different ways. Some were just outraged and maybe doing it for the likes and retweets. I'm not quite sure, but there was a lot of misinformation spread, as there always is about these kind of things. Like, people love to get on a company's back, and TikTok is in the wrong here, but not really for the reasons that I was seeing so often. I spoke to some of the OBS developers and in particular the business dev about this, just to make sure I was completely right before tweeting anything out. But essentially what has happened, TikTok launched Live Studio streaming app. It uses some OBS Studio code and it's up for debate how much it uses, but certainly a lot of the game capture and possibly a big portion of the code base is based on OBS Studio, which is completely fine because OBS Studio is open source and it's published under a license called GPL V2. And one of the requirements on that license, maybe the main requirement, is that any program that uses any OBS Studio code has to also make their source code available. And most companies that adhere to that license will put their source code up to a platform like GitHub. And as of right now, TikTok haven't done that. So that is what they can be blamed for. Like, that is the thing that they should be in trouble for, because they're not adhering to the requirement from GPL version 2 of also publishing their source code. But there was a lot of people, you know, saying about them stealing from OBS Studio and comparing it to the Streamlabs situation. They're different situations. Streamlabs, what is now Streamlabs Desktop and used to be called Streamlabs OBS, they did adhere to GPL version 2 and they uploaded their source code to GitHub. You could have a look at the source code for Streamlabs OBS. The Streamlabs situation was worse because of what they did with the OBS name, even though the OBS developers asked them not to. So it's two different situations, and it can be all sorted if TikTok just adhere and put their code up online. And I saw some nice tweets from the OBS contact that I had where they're hoping to work with TikTok in that matter to solve the issue. And then they're certainly not getting their pitchforks out and wanting people to chase after TikTok, because that is the point of open source software, and hopefully, you know, TikTok can develop some features that maybe OBS can take inspiration from. But that will sum up the news from this week, really, I think. So where do we want to start with the big recap of the year, Ben?
I've got a lot to go through here. So I think we can start with hardware. I think looking back at last year's episode we did end of year, we kind of gave a best and worst of each category, or best and sometimes, just to see over the year what was the best thing either in news or hardware or software that came out that's most memorable. So I think we could try to do that again this year as we're going through everything that went through 2021. And again, it kind of blends with 2020, but we'll try to focus on stuff this year specifically. So hardware first. I think hardware is pretty much dominated by Elgato this year in the streamer space, which is no real surprise. We had the Wave panels, which I think were the first thing that got announced, along with the light strip and the mouse mat from Elgato. That was back in March or so. We had the AVerMedia Livestreamer Nexus in May, and the mic, which I forgot about, that had a lot of hype initially, and then seems like it kind of fell off a little bit from what I initially saw. We had the Elgato, actually, this is really like Elgato's whole suite in July came out, which was kind of the big moment, I think, of the year, which was the face cam, the long anticipated face cam, the Wave XLR, which is the mic interface for XLR mics that uses the same Wavelength software, and the mic arms, which are the low profile and the one I'm forgetting, the high profile one.
I think they just basically call it mic arm, yeah.
Yeah, basically. And then I think the last thing we had from hardware this year that's notable was the Go XLR mics that just came out in November, in a couple of different colors, and their premium XLR cable too. Can't forget that. So anything else that we're forgetting, you think, from hardware this year, Pete?
I mean, we're undoubtedly forgetting like the pro camera market. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that use the higher end Sony cameras and things like that. But in terms of specifically designed for streamers, I think this mostly covers it. If you know of anything that we're missing, then let us know in chat. But yeah, Elgato, as they always do, have released some great products this year. You know, I mean, I'm not going to stand up and say that everybody should be getting their light strips, but I really like the Wave panels. Again, nobody had really done that very well until you get to the super expensive stuff. Like the ones you can get off Amazon are just absolute garbage for the most part. And I did a video comparing them, so you can compare them for yourself. Facecam and Wave XLR, I think, have been hugely, hugely successful. And I think I'm not alone in the content creator world in saying that Facecam certainly is the best webcam right now at that price point, if you want to go the premium webcam route. Obviously, there's arguments as to whether you should be saving that money to go for an entry-level mirrorless or DSLR camera instead and then buying a capture card. But obviously Elgato kind of has a good strong hold in that market as well. Wave XLR, I think, has been the product that surprised me the most, just because it's grown on me so much. Like, I was a big Go XLR user, and I thought I would not be able to live without the faders, but in my extended testing of Wave XLR, I really like the simplicity. And one of the software updates that we're going to talk about has made that even better with 1.4, which has recently come out, enabling everybody to be able to use VSTs on their Wave microphones, not just XLR, but Wave 1 and Wave 3 as well. So for me, I'd never got to try the Livestreamer Nexus from AVerMedia, and I don't know if that is because they didn't send out enough review samples, or if they... I mean, if they're watching this right now and I'm wearing an Elgato jumper, maybe it does look like I'm fully sponsored by Elgato, but I'm not in any way affiliated with Elgato. They just send products for review, as do a lot of companies. But I didn't get to try out the Livestreamer Nexus, but I know that Harris did, and I think Adam Epos Fox did as well, and both had quite a lot of critiques. I think they have updated the software through that, so maybe it's gotten a little bit better, but I can't really talk about it personally because I haven't been able to try it too much. And then the mic arms, the mic arms for me, as you can see, I'm still using the new Rode mic arm, Rode PSA 1 Plus, but I am kind of doing this long-term testing of various different mic arms, so I can hopefully put a video together comparing all of those. So I don't know if we're going to do the... Do you want to do like a best hardware release and worst hardware release from this list?
At least best, yeah. I think if you had to pick one that you think was product of the year, essentially, in the streamer space off this list, what would you choose?
Tricky because I'm not going to be using the face cam because I already have invested in right. all the gear to use a professional camera, but maybe that is the most interesting in terms of what most streamers would care about. I'm going to go with Wave XLR because it's been the biggest surprise for me. I thought it was going to be like the budget way into XLR, but I actually now think with like the VST support and how little desk space it takes up, that maybe it's going to be an option that a lot more streamers with bigger budgets would also still choose. What about you?
Yep. I actually want to go with you, not to once again agree with you, but WaveXLR is one that I've been able to test and been really surprised by. And I think that of this list, I want to say it's the most innovative that have come out. The Facecam is great. Don't get me wrong, from what I've seen, I've not tested it, but the WaveXLR, the ability to add the audio routing and channel system from Wavelink to an XLR mic is very new. So I think that's why it impressed me so much. And that's the one that I think stands out from this year that I'll probably remember most. Although Facecam is very close. Again, if it didn't have the same webcam setup that we do, that one probably would be up there as well. So that's the one that I'll probably look back on.
Well, the thing is with the Wave XLR, it's propped up massively by Wavelink. Like, if it wasn't for the software, then we wouldn't be talking about it anywhere near as much. So that ties us nicely into talking about some of the big software releases that came out this year. OBS, actually only one major version update this year to version 27. To remind people what that was when they added undo ability. So you could control Z up to 5,000 actions or something. If you move something by accident, which was highly, highly requested, and actually one of the few features that Streamlabs Desktop had before OBS Studio did. Missing file warnings, source transitions, and track mat stingers. My track mat stinger tutorial video in After Effects has done really well. I checked that just actually before we came on to see how many people are using track mats. I think it's kind of a good judge. Lots of people using stingers in general, but track mat stingers now added. And then they had a minor update, I guess, a couple of months ago, which was to 27.1, which added YouTube integration, which we use. Well, I use to do this live stream now, so you can actually set up your live stream directly from OBS Studio for YouTube, as well as a couple of other things. So OBS, as always, big updates. I'm sure they'll have version 28 coming at some point next year, and obviously I'll be covering that. But some other notable mentions, Wavelink 1.4, I feel like we've kind of covered that now, but the software that allows Wave 1, Wave 3, and Wave XLR microphones to do all of the audio routing and submixes and now add VST support. I guess Wavelink technically probably came out last year with the Wave microphones, but this update for VST support came this year.
Yeah, it's big.
Sticking with Elgato, do we want to do Stream Deck 5? I don't know if you know too much about it because you're still not a Stream Deck user, or are you now? I can't remember.
Oh, I am actually. I did finally. Actually, that's one thing I kind of want to talk about was I've kind of become a believer in the Stream Deck since I've been able to test it out, because I know last year I didn't have one at this time. But I got to say, after testing it and using it's kind of like just the sandbox that it is of what you can do, the stream is pretty crazy. And some of the features for the update came out this year are pretty big. Having things like plugins and Discover and custom icons, having even the sound effects from Elgato and stuff, is pretty crazy just to have so much you can do with that button, any of those buttons on your Stream Deck. So I think this one is pretty big. And again, I've come around on the Stream Deck since my initial review on it. So I think it's been pretty big overall. There was also a Twitch Studio update, which added the advanced audio mixer in September. And then Logitech G Hub got NVIDIA Broadcast added to it. I don't know exactly when that was, but that was
quite recent.
Okay, yeah, that was just adding the broadcast feature to it, right? Because I think NVIDIA Broadcast was last year, correct?
Yeah,
whole software.
And now with like the VST support, I think with Wavelink, you can package up NVIDIA Broadcast, like the noise removal and things into it. Just want to touch on, we've got one of the OBS contributors in the chat. XLJ says that 27.2 is going to come out before version 28. So I guess we'll be finding out at some point what is going to be included in 27.2. 27.1 was actually a pretty sizable update. It still had enough to talk about. So yeah, very excited to see what comes of OBS in the next months and next year. In terms of biggest update software wise of 2021, I think it's fairly obvious it's OBS version 27.
Yeah.
So many new features, and you know, when software becomes as stable as it is now, especially with the extra attention that OBS has had over the past couple of months with the Streamlabs situation, this is definitely going to win it for me. Stream Deck 5.0 was interesting, but it was more, I guess, reorganizing like their plugin browser and things like that, that made it useful. And we talked enough about Wavelink today. So let's move on to platform updates. And where would we start other than Twitch? Twitch has released a hell of a lot of updates this year. So how we sort of put together the notes for this show today is we went through all of the notes from the podcast episodes that we've done this year, which must be 30, 35 episodes, and just brought in any updates that we saw about Twitch. I'm going to rattle them off for you, Ben, and then maybe we'll highlight a few of the ones that we think were sizable to talk about. So February, easy emote management system. March onwards, DMCA tools. May was chat replies. June was animated emotes. Also in June was activity feed updates. In August, we had stream display ads, multiplayer ads, creator goals, and an ad manager. In October, we had chat verification to tackle the hate raids. In October as well, we started seeing audio ads, as well as first-time chatter highlights and emote analytics. And then finally, in December, we've seen ban evasion moderation tools added. So 14 different updates. There's been many minor ones and tests ran as well, but I tried to only include things that have actually been released that people can now use. But for all the hate that Twitch gets, that's a pretty successful year of feature releases. And lots of tools, especially a lot of these tools had to be built very quickly. We talked about how the MCA, the writing was on the wall and they should have been working on that for ages. But in terms of the hate raids and the chat verification and the ban evasion and things like that, they have all had to be built probably just in this year and in a couple of months. So which ones do you want to highlight and talk about your favorites?
So to be clear, just to make everyone know, these are platform updates specifically, not just news around the platform, which we'll talk on in a bit here about Twitch overall.
Right.
But in terms of some of the biggest platform updates, I think there's a couple of themes that stand out to me. One is, like you said, is things that had to be made by Twitch quickly because something happened that they had to respond to. So the first was DMCA tools. I think we talked the entire last year about DMCA and how, you know, there were community solutions out there to delete all your clips, do things like that to help get rid of that in the meantime, before Twitch eventually created some more powerful DMCA tools to help solve that stuff. And even if it's not completely solved, they at least have ways for you to mass delete VODs or archive VODs now instead of deleting them, things like that. Plus the chat verification, because the bot raids came out. Once again, the community came out and had ways to help combat that with like the panic button that we saw and ways to kind of lock down your chat and do that quickly before finally adding chat verification a bit later. Like you said, I know Twitch kind of had a short time frame and had to really react quickly to build these things. And it took them longer than it should have, maybe, or, you know, in the meantime of them developing this, it was still going on. So I was glad to see the community was able to kind of create something in the meantime to help fill that gap. But those are two of probably the biggest, you know, moments of the year that stick out to me from this list overall.
Yeah. I think the other one to highlight is how many new ad formats they've released. Just from this list, stream display ads, multiplayer ads, ad manager and audio ads. Maybe there's a negative connotation to that from people that are watching and listening to this podcast that are just viewers of Twitch, because it's like, oh, wait, more ways to display ads to me. But from the creator side of it, it's more ways of being able to monetize. And actually, I think with a lot of these updates, it's trying to make the ads less intrusive. Certainly with the multiplayer ads, I think those are the ones where you get a choice of which Converse colors you think you're going to be wearing next summer or something like that, and your response directly rewards the streamer. So that's another one to highlight. But I think you've covered it really with the DMCA tools is probably the biggest one, and that has been an ongoing effort, hasn't it? It hasn't been just one thing that they released. It's been various different updates that have come out throughout the year.
Yeah, and really quick on that ads point. Can I just ask, anybody who's watching a lot of Twitch right now, is it just me, or are there a lot more display ads now where it's that little skinny banner at the bottom of the player and it moves the video up and down? I feel like I'm seeing way more of that than the mid-rolls now, which is a lot less intrusive, and I actually prefer that. But I'm curious if it's just me or if they've actually done that for everyone. If it's rolling out to everyone, then I think it's a really, really big upgrade, because we're no longer getting your content interrupted. It's just kind of shifting it a little bit, and it's much more viewable than having that little tiny corner window with your stream. So this actually would be one of the better updates I've seen this year, if that's consistent for everyone too. seems like the chat kind of agrees here. Seeing those Sony banners too.
Yeah, we're seeing a few people saying that they're seeing a bunch of those ads. I wonder if that's something that's maybe rolling out more in North America, because I don't think I've seen that many more of those. Maybe my eyes are deceiving me and I'm not watching enough, not watching enough Twitch. Should we move on to YouTube? Then the platform updates from YouTube. Like Ben said, we're going to be coming back and talking about, you know, other things outside of platform updates that Twitch has done right and wrong in a later section. But let's do the same thing for YouTube. So what has YouTube done this year? Do you want to go through this, Ben? Read through the list first and sort of what month things came out?
Yeah, I think so. YouTube maybe has fewer platform updates overall, but you might argue that they're more impactful than what Twitch did, at least in terms of new features. So the first one is Shorts, which is a massive one. I mean, that's an entire new content type that they're adding to the platform. That was back in May, which is kind of hard to believe. I feel like we've had Shorts forever now, but I guess that was back in May when that really started rolling out. We also had sub-only chat, clips, and polls added in July. Again, features you kind of brought over from Twitch, but were really big to add to YouTube. That's definitely a theme with some of the stuff you see YouTube this year, is bringing over ideas from Twitch and Facebook, or things that they just needed to get parity with the other platforms, but are really big for YouTube streamers. Super Thanks was in July. That's one that was pretty interesting. We had Member Milestones in September. We have Theater Mode on mobile also in September, come out then. In November, we had the Roadmap for 2022, which is one of the cooler things I think we've seen from all the platforms. We had in November, the dislike counter was removed. So that's maybe one in the opposite direction for YouTube. And then finally, in December this month, or rolling out now, we have Search Insights, which is that new keyword kind of optimization tool for your dashboard. So I think that's most of the big updates we've seen. Pete, anything stand out to you on this list as some of the biggest moments?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because with YouTube, they have so many different types of content that you can release now. You talked about how Shorts is one of the things that they came out with this year. And also like Search Insights, that's nothing to do with live. That's just to do with the VOD platform. But because the streaming space is now about more than streaming, it's about being a content creator, I thought that we'd include all the different updates that we saw on YouTube, because I think they're all important. It's interesting that they've already given us their roadmap for 2022. In terms of live anyway. So maybe we could actually just record straight after this. We can do our 2022 recap and just get the YouTube bits done straight away, since we know what's coming out for them. But I think a lot of this stuff has been heavily requested, and maybe it doesn't look like it's groundbreaking. Sub-only chat, clips, polls, Super Thanks, Theater Mode on mobile, Member Milestones. Like, these are all things that existed on Twitch already, right? And YouTube is catching up in that space, I guess. What is interesting, I think, about YouTube is it really concentrates on, it must have some great teams working and working out what they think is the highest priority for streamers. Because people are still, and rightfully so, talking about the layout and the chat differences and how it's not as good as Twitch. And we've even heard YouTubers speaking out about this as well. I think this year we heard Valkyrie saying about the features that she still misses for YouTube live streaming. But there must be enough promise of these features coming that YouTube is signing, you know, the big stream is something that we're also going to be covering in just a sec. So I think for me, actually the news that's most exciting is the roadmap for 2022, which is maybe a cop out. So something that actually came out this year, I would go with like the necessary features of sub-only chat, clips, and polls. Biggest disappointment has to be the removal of dislikes. Still hate that change. You know, it's fully rolled out now for me, so like I can't browse YouTube and see dislikes apart from on my own videos. So yeah, that's really great for your mental health, isn't it? nobody else has dislikes except for my videos. I think YouTube had a really great year, definitely in terms of acquisitions, but also in terms of features, and really excited by their roadmap for next year.
Yeah, let's hope that more platforms do that. I would like to see more of the rollout in the future for Facebook and Twitch and that kind of thing, because that really helps just help transparency you've seen from the platform overall from the people who are over there. We also have a couple of random other updates from different platforms that we kind of grouped together into a miscellaneous category, which are either, you know, other social media, mostly other social media platforms. The first one was back in April, Discord added stage channels. And then they kind of moved back a little bit from those later on in the year, but they really pushed those hard in April. We also had the Twitter tip jar in May, which is kind of the first time Twitter really explored monetization for their platform, followed by super follows and ticketed spaces in June. on the same Twitter thread there. Back in August, Discord added threads and events, which have been two of my personal favorite additions of the list. Instagram added links and stories for everyone in November, another great addition that Pete and I have used quite a bit since then. Also in November, we had Facebook have some subscription updates to the platform. I can't remember exactly when the split was announced. Pete, was this in November or was that earlier in the year? And this was just some different changes.
I think I wrote that down for later on in the show. It was in June that they announced it. And that is going on throughout the rest of 2023. If you're talking about the 0% revenue that they're taking. Yeah. I think interestingly, Discord has probably been the platform that's added the most like big changes to their platform. And we even covered one at the start of this show that's brand new, but they've also rolled back on some and I need to test them more. I think we've talked a few times about how we should schedule an event in the Gaming Careers Discord for this podcast. So I really will, I'm going to start having a notepad next to me when we do these live streams to actually write these ideas down that we have, because I'd love to be able to test and tell you guys more about, you know, how that works and if it pisses people off having a notification in a huge Discord server like the Gaming Careers one about a podcast that they may or may not care about. And also Twitter has gone forward and backward with a few different monetization options this year, haven't they? With Tipjar, Super Followers, Ticketed Spaces, and Twitter Blue. Twitter Blue is still not available over here in the UK. I think it's still just US only. So I think when we covered that, I said I'd probably want a few more features anyway, but it's certainly interesting to see Discord in particular stepping on the toes more and more of these streaming spaces. And I think we need to give Facebook more love. We've talked about that a lot of times on this podcast as well. They don't even have their own section in this year review. So seeing as they're a big enough platform now, we need to concentrate more on Facebook next year and be able to get weekly updates on what they're releasing and what they're doing for the creators creating on that platform.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I mean, as someone who tested Discord features, that's my standout of this group for sure, especially events. I think adding events was such a necessary feature on Discord, and places like Guilded were kind of making them have to react to that. So I think that's my standout for sure.
The events that came out in August, was that the first review of events was that you couldn't do events outside of the Discord platform, right? Mm. And then since then, now you can have things like a YouTube link or a stream link, right? Yes, yeah, so that I think I agree with you. I think that's probably the best update from non-Twitch and YouTube platforms. Let's move on to talking about streamer signings. Probably not a section we would have had until September, because since September, there has been four big streamers moving to YouTube, one re-signing with Twitch from a different platform, and one re-signing with Twitch from Twitch again. So, I mean, we covered these at the time, but just in case you haven't seen the stream before or listened to the podcast, we had in September, Dr. Lupo and Tim the Tapman moving to YouTube. In October, Nick Merckx re-signing with Twitch after already being on Twitch. And then in December, Ludwig moving to YouTube, Courage re-signing with YouTube, and Toast moving back to Twitch from Facebook. So these are all probably top 50 streamers, really. I don't think anyone would argue with that. And the big three, I would say, would be the three that moved to YouTube: Dr. Lupo, Tim the Tapman, Ludwig. We've covered them in great detail in their own individual podcasts. And, you know, some of us predicted the Ludwig move ahead of time, but we're not going to name names. I think probably the most interesting one for me, I would say Ludwig, but then actually Tim the Tapman was probably the biggest of the three creators, right? Ludwig had a massive year and has had a massive few years on Twitch. And actually something that we haven't... Oh, I have got it later on is Ludwig's subathon. But these are three huge, huge streamers that Twitch has lost to YouTube this year. And even though they've managed to retain Nick Merckx and bring Toast back from Facebook to Twitch, I still think more people were talking about the three that moved away from Twitch to YouTube.
Yeah, I agree. I think the two that stand out to me the most, like you just said, are Tim and Ludwig in particular. I think Nick Merckx is kind of at the same level, but you don't have as much hype around a re-signing versus switching platforms, right? I would say that Tim had the biggest like shock moment when he moved because, you know, Lupo had moved, but Tim's sort of a little bit just better known in the space, I think. And it was a really big moment when he moved over. But I kind of think that Ludwig's move is actually the biggest of all the moves, even over Tim, because I think he's going to be the one that kind of shifts the perception of YouTube more so than Tim with stuff that he's building there, stuff that he wants to do in terms of content and events. So I think that's my pick for like the biggest signing of the year, even though Tim is really close and there was a lot of controversy on that when it happened. But Pete, do you have like one of those two or one of the others that's the biggest to you of the year?
I'm with you. I think Dr. Lupo and Tim, because the news kind of came one day apart, was like a, not to use a boxing analogy, but a big like left-right hit at the same time. But for me, Ludwig, he had the chance to be like the face of Twitch in terms of all the things that had happened for him this year. The subathon being the big standout where he set a record and, you know, streamed for 31 days consecutively without a single break. Like the stream didn't drop. So that's the most surprising, I think, out of the three of those. But yeah, lots. They're always really interesting when they come out, and it's great to be able to talk about them with you on this podcast and the reasons behind them. The common reason for those three streamers moving to YouTube has been the reduced hours in the contract that they need to stream, and the focus on being able to do content, more produced content outside of just live streams. So all three wanting to do, you know, maybe higher production value shows and things as well like that. So let's move on to the final section, but probably the biggest section, which is to talk about all the other news. So this isn't platform specific. This is kind of just a list of things that happened this year. And we'll start, Ben, by talking about the removal of the PogChamp remote. Can you remember that? That happened in January.
Yeah, that feels again. 2020 and 2021 really blend together. But yeah, I guess that was back in January. And then it actually ended up getting replaced by the current PogChamp after the whole rotation each day with the new faces that came out. January, that's wild. That was this year. We also had the maybe the funniest fail of the year, I think you had down here, Pete, with Twitch amidst all the DMCA controversy, just muting Metallica, I think of their own broadcast when they were trying to show Metallica playing something. That was pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, that for me goes down as the funniest fail of the year, because it was just because it was in the midst of the DMCA apocalypse that was going on, and it was their own broadcast, and the fact that they replaced it with like nursery rhyme music. We also had breakout for outside of gaming streaming, 3 million people watching the NASA rover land on Mars across all of the different YouTube streams in different languages. In March, we had the Twitch Woman Alliance controversy, you know, when they spelt woman with an X to try and be more inclusive, but it kind of backfired. And of course, I don't know, why did we not have their own section for Glimish's launch in March, Ben? This is going to be the platform that competes with YouTube. I'm actually, whilst you give me a summary of what you think of Glimish, I'm going to open up the website and see how many people are streaming right now.
I did it this morning. I counted. I went on the site. Pete, there are 7 people streaming on Glimish right now. So
that's up from last year when they had 0.
Oh, really? I mean, they're growing, right? Just a couple more thousand years and they might be get up there. So F in the chat if anybody streamed on Glimish. We'll keep looking for new platforms, though. Maybe Trovo will be the one to kind of upset in the future here. Ludwig Subathon was from March to April. Huge event. And again, kind of crazy that he's not in the recap from that earlier this year. That fed right into the hot tub meta in May. Pete, I'll always remember that thumbnail that you made of us sitting in a hot tub for that episode. It's just locked in my mind from that time.
What do you mean made? That was a photo.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Real life photo.
It was a great time. You know, doing the podcast in the hot tub was something I won't forget anytime soon. We had a couple accelerator programs this year. The sports accelerator program was in May. Twitch trying to break out into other content types. So that was a pretty cool thing to see. Local sub pricing also in May, which was probably one of the bigger features, I think, of the year.
Yeah, so that's not necessarily a feature launch, is it? But it's something that has affected pretty much any streamer on the platform. Mm-hmm. And again, I think there was quite a lot of backlash about it. But I don't stream on Twitch. I don't necessarily know how much it's impacting people other than what I see on Twitter. So again, we'll go to chat if anybody has any opinions on the local sub pricing. But it certainly has helped those countries that you know, where the cost of living is a lot less than it is in the States, be able to support their favorite creators. And we've seen through those graphics that always come up on Reddit. What do they call them? Where you see where all the streamers group together.
Infographics?
No, maybe? It's the one where you can see the circles.
The Atlas.
Yeah, Twitch Atlas. We've certainly seen countries outside of English-speaking countries massively benefit from the local sub pricing, haven't we? Also in May, Twitch added follower emotes, so you could follow a channel and lock an emote without having to subscribe to them. They've had a massive update for tags this year. There was the big adding of 350 tags in May. And then since then, I reckon every month we've probably had 10 to 20 tags, including the Satanist tag, if you want to use that, as we come into Christmas time. And then, as we mentioned before, Facebook taking 0% sub revenue through 2023. That was kind of just announced by Mark Zuckerberg in a tweet. But really great for all those people that are creating on Facebook because they keep 100% of sub revenue.
Through this year, I think it's one of the biggest changes of Facebook for the year. Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest ones we've seen so far roll out on Facebook. Speaking of Spanish stuff, we had Mr. Beast launching Spanish channels in July, and then I think a bunch of other languages as well, as he's kept doing that, and it's worked pretty well for him. OBS launched the Project Bounty program in August. Again, great updates from OBS rolling out. And then the Twitch hate raid started in August as well. Which kind of fed into some of the things we saw come from Twitch from the platform side and the community for ways to help combat that around August. Streamlabs launched monthly tipping back in August as well, which amidst the Streamlabs controversy, I think has caused some issues for people who've not been able to cancel that from what I've seen. A day off Twitch was in September. That was kind of in response to all of the changes that Twitch was or wasn't making to the platform. And it also coincided, I believe, right with the same day that Tim moved or Dr. Lupo moved.
It really screwed up the data, didn't it? Because a lot of people wanted to look at how much the hashtag a day off Twitch actually affected viewer numbers. And it just so happened to coincide with Dr. Lupo and Tim the Tap Man leaving the platform. So then people were trying to do all kinds of crazy math, taking their average viewer concurrence and moving it across. And I think a day off Twitch was mostly to do with like their lack of stuff for the hate raids, right? Was it more than that? I think it was only a few months ago.
Well, yeah, because so hate raids were in August. Day off Twitch was in September. So I think it was mainly because they were not reacting fast enough to it or making some sort of solution. That's when they came out with the demands, right? That they want to see this thing added, that kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of what the catalyst was for that movement. But after that, thankfully, we did get the verification features added eventually. But then there was a new controversy with Twitch adding the whole paid boost to streamer in October, which had its own blowback when that came out. I actually don't know if that's fully rolled out, Pete. Do you know if it's actually a thing on the platform still?
I've seen it became available for some US viewers to be able to contribute, I think probably to some US streams. So I haven't seen it myself, but I've seen people like Zach Bussey tweeting about it. So I think it's still rolling out, still being tested, but whether it's successful or not. Twitch actually had a really rough end to the year. That's what I'm seeing here. Like with hate raids, a day off Twitch, paid boost this streamer. And then the next bit of news that we have was the data leak, the huge data leak, which we really haven't heard anything about. They're just kind of sweeping it under the rug that all these streamers payout amounts was leaked, and as well as like all of Twitch's source code. So I mean, I don't know really what they can do other than, you know, tweet that it happened and just get on with it, because that's what they've done. But yeah, really rough end of the year for Twitch. That's why it felt like we were hating on Twitch so much, is because the last 4 months of podcasts we've had something to talk about pretty much every week that they've done wrong. Speaking of disasters. Go on.
Yeah, you know, there's plenty of content. That's what I was saying, is lots to talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of controversies, in October, we also had Valkyrae's skin care product launch, which went pretty badly for her. And we covered that in its own podcast episode. And then finally, the biggest screw up probably of the year, well, a Twitch data leak. I guess that's not really their fault, but the Streamlabs meltdown on social media where, you know, even Edward Snowden's getting involved and tweeting about how much you suck as a company. That happened in November, and that's really the full year, I think, in terms of news that isn't necessarily to do with platform updates. So Ben, I'm going to ask you, from this list, what do you think is the best piece of news and the worst piece of news? If you worked at one of these companies and you worked as a social media manager and you're the one having to deal with great news, you can choose one piece that you tweeted out that was great news and one piece that you're getting hate for that was bad news.
I gotta say the Glimmish launch is the best news that we've had. I think my favorite, actually looking at this list, I kind of think the thing that stands out is actually, this is not even like a streaming specific thing, I guess, so I don't know if this is a cop out, but Mr. Beast's Spanish speaking channels and other language channels having such a strong reception, like millions and millions of views by just translating his videos. I still think that's like a really untapped potential for not just YouTube videos, but also streaming and breaking into other languages. Especially if you look at how many Spanish viewers and streamers there are on Twitch right now that you just can't reach as an English streamer. I think there's going to be more done there. So I think that's like maybe one of the biggest things to watch out for in the next year and how that continues to roll out with content just being translated. I don't know. Is there one that stands out to you as the best? And I'll think of my worst as you tell me your best.
Do you think I should be doing then gaming careers in Spanish and find somebody that's doing the Spanish voiceovers for my tutorials? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, why not, right? It might be free real estate, all right, basically.
Ben, what languages can you speak? Here's your job interview right now.
Like a tiny bit of Spanish.
Ah, that's all you need. My English vocabulary is limited anyway, as you can hear. That's interesting. I would like to see more case studies outside of just Mr. Beast on the different language channels, because as you said, it's been incredibly successful and he's effectively in some countries doubling the amount of income that he's getting in terms of AdSense just for doing the same amount of work, or not even the same amount of work. He just sends that off to a company that finds somebody that sounds like him and says the words in Spanish and other languages now. In terms of worst piece of news, I'll try and help you out here. I think maybe it's just because it's the most recent and so it sticks in my head. I think Streamlabs, that was the most hate I'd seen piled on a company, and that's largely because so many big companies that have huge followings on social media, OBS, Edward Snowden, Elgato, Lightstream, they all piled on about their experience. So I think that's probably the worst piece of news from the year. But then, you know, Twitch's Women Alliance, it kind of just depends on you know, which you have the most personal connection. And obviously I'm a huge fan of OBS and OBS Studio and the developers working there. So that's probably the one that affected me the most in a negative light.
Yeah, I think the hate raids were also particularly bad, especially for Twitch, just the publicity that came out. But they at least came out with some ways to deal with it. Not saying it's perfect, whereas I'm pretty sure Streamlabs has just kind of ghosted on the topic at this point. Like they put out a response, a JPEG. And
yeah, they haven't tweeted since. It's been over a month now, because that was in November, wasn't it? Over a month. And this is from, you know, any brand, they'll be trying to post to social media a few times a day to keep their engagement. They've got to meet engagement rates and all these kind of things. Streamlabs have not tweeted since that happened. So that should probably tell you that it is the worst screw up. They're just clearly going to wait for January the 1st or Christmas Day to tweet out some generic, like, have a great Christmas, and hope people have forgotten about the situation.
Hoping that TikTok takes away from the spotlight for a bit with their OBS stuff.
Yeah, maybe. I might turn notifications on Streamlabs' Twitter just to see what the next tweet is, because I don't want to miss it, because it doesn't matter what it is. It's the one that they've thought about, like, this is the perfect tweet to send. I've been thinking about it for a month. In terms of games and categories, you've done a little breakdown. Is this something that I can open up to show on stream?
Yes, sorry. I think that should show you the last month at a glance. Hopefully it'll look decent.
I'll zoom in a bit.
It basically just compares the last 365 days to the previous. So you can pretty much see, this is just for Twitch. I couldn't find a version of it for YouTube, unfortunately. But pretty much across the board, Twitch is really, really up on everything. I think the thing that's kind of interesting to look at here is the most watched channels and the trending games. The standout games for this year compared to last year are Rust, Apex, and Minecraft, whereas Just Chatting and GTA are still the kings of the categories. That's not really changing too much. And then the most watched channels, only one of them is English speaking. The other four, two are Portuguese and two are Spanish speaking. So again, this goes with that theme that there's just so much, you know, non-English content that's popular, super popular on Twitch now. And I think it's a huge untapped market. So just kind of crazy to see those numbers though across the board, that every single one here of those key metrics at the top is green. And we'll see if that continues in 2022 now that the pandemic hopefully is going a little less crazy.
I don't know about where you live. Over in the UK, it is not in any way. We're all probably going back into lockdown over Christmas or something. So
we'll see.
Maybe this is just life from now on. We'll never get to meet Ben. It's just going to be a virtual friendship for life. But yeah, that was really interesting. Thanks for putting that together. We can definitely look again next year. And we have to cover more of these Spanish and Portuguese speaking streamers. Let's talk about wish lists then. 2022, what do you want to see platform wise, product wise, any of the above?
I mean, the biggest thing, so YouTube really kind of came into its own this year. I think with adding a lot of parity to the platform and adding a lot of big streamers like Tim and Ludwig, I want to see them continue to do that, especially on just improving the aspect of, you know, exploring streams. We've talked about how they don't have a directory feature, and that's on purpose to help, you know, try to do their own way of finding streams. But I still think it's pretty hard to find streams that you want to watch outside of ones that you recommended on YouTube. And I think that, I don't know, I just want to see YouTube really push the boundary more with becoming a real big streaming platform. Maybe not just even in gaming, but across the board. Because I think the YouTube gaming is essentially their streaming overall, right? So maybe they rebrand a little bit or something.
They've got the exact same problem that I have. I've named my channel Gaming Careers, and it's nothing to do with gaming. It's to do with streaming. I was actually watching Adam Epos Fox's stream the other day, and he was talking to somebody in chat, and he was like, "Yeah, I don't know why he called it Gaming Careers when it's nothing to do with gaming." And I was like, "That's true, you know why?" But you, at least I'm in good company. YouTube has also made the same mistake and called their platform YouTube Gaming, and out of all the platforms, they're probably the ones that have the most diverse live streamed content. We talked about how NASA's launch had over 3 million people watching it live on YouTube. So, I mean, it's probably just a change that they're going to make at some point and just name everything YouTube or YouTube Live or something like that. I don't know what I'm going to answer for this in terms of my 2022 wish list. I completely agree with you that I want to see YouTube close the gap just in terms of like what the experience is like to stream or watch a stream on YouTube, like a directory and things like that. Maybe that they kind of said that they might not go with the directory route, and they've got the smartest algorithm, maybe comparable with TikTok in terms of suggesting content. I'd love to see them start to suggest live streams on the homepage. But yeah, that probably goes down for my wish list. In terms of products and things, I would like to see some competition for the Stream Deck. Maybe the AVerMedia Nexus was kind of that this year, but I'd like to see more ways of being able to control streams outside of just what we have, which is a great tool. I'd love to see more microphone companies start to take streaming seriously. We've really seen Shure do that this year, you know, with their MV7 and MV7X, I think they're called, sort of updates to the SM7B in a way, but way more control over the sound and USB functionality as well as XLR. Cameras as well. We have actually seen, I think, a bit of an update this year in terms of camera companies building in webcam functionality, like a USB connection to the computer, but it's still not really comparable with a capture card. But as they start to become more aware of how many people are buying these tools for content creation at a computer, so streaming or even just filming videos at their computer, hopefully we're going to see more companies take that seriously. We've definitely seen the update, I think, in audio, like... Mm-hmm. When the big guns like Shure and I know Luit were the company that partnered with Elgato to make the Wave microphones, like there's definitely some companies now that are more aware of this market and how big it is for their brand, like how many people are using their products. Obviously, Blue being acquired by Logitech as well. So like I know that wasn't this year, but I feel like audio maybe is a step ahead in terms of realizing that podcasting and live streaming and content creation is a big part of their market, and maybe cameras are just a bit behind that. Yeah. So that would be interesting.
I'd agree. I think I also would love to hear from chat. If anyone here has things you want to see in 2022, definitely let us know for either features on platforms or hardware, like Pete mentioned, things that you just want to see in the streamer space for the next year. Cause then it'll be in the chat. And if you get it right, you can go back and look at it when you called it on this podcast.
Oh, there we go. Dino Visual says this live stream was actually suggested to me on the homepage. So clearly it's working. I mean, you've got great taste in videos that you watch, Dino Visuals, if this gets recommended to you. We've got a suggestion from Exaljo, wants to see a built-in plugin manager for OBS in 2022. That's definitely going to be a popular tool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree with you too on the cameras pieces. Seems like they could be more intuitive for streaming, and we have things like the face cam now, but I'd like to see more of the actual, you know, kind of mid-level camera support streaming more than just photography and video, and be kind of plug-in and play, that sort of thing. So love to see more of that in the future.
A technical one, but Gaj Botron, I'm rubbish at reading these names, looking forward to seeing YouTube/Twitch transition to the new AV1 encoder. I mean, we're not going to get too technical here, but that is an exciting change at some point when we're going to be able to get you know, 240 FPS streams and 1440p and 4K streams. Definitely exciting. So some great suggestions in chat, and maybe we'll come back at the 2022 review and see if anybody actually managed to call it out, or just tweet your comment to me when it inevitably comes out. We've got to also guess, you know, what are the companies going to be releasing? Elgato is good at thinking outside of the box. So what are they thinking about releasing next year? You know, I don't think anybody would have thought that they were going to be doing acoustic panels at the start of last year. So yeah, it'll be exciting. One thing is for sure, the streaming space is growing year on year. More and more companies, more and more platforms, and more people are wanting to stream. And that is only a good thing. So if you thought this was a crazy recap of like 200 bits of news that we've covered, I'm sure 2022 is going to surpass it probably within the first 6 months. So we're going to have more to talk about on the podcast next year. I think probably we've got a few decisions to make on the podcast next year. It's definitely going to keep going. But whether we keep doing it here on YouTube, we dual stream it to Twitch. I probably need to, you know, email Twitch and get my partnership cancelled if that's going to be the case. But it will be continuing. I think the first stream back we have is the 3rd of January. Is that right, Ben? I'm trying to think of the first Monday.
Yeah, 2 weeks from now. I think we're taking a week off for the holidays and then coming back first of the year, which I'm sure will be sort of a, you know, kind of what we did last year with kind of looking at the year ahead and maybe goal setting, stuff like that too.
Yeah. And as always, we're going to keep this show live streamed because it's so much better being able to interact live with people and see their opinions as we've done throughout this stream. My latest video, actually, I covered a tool that has been built for Twitch where you can get people's comments to show on screen. I don't know if you saw it, Ben, but I'd love to try and work a way to get that working with YouTube next year so we can actually highlight comments from chat and have them appear on stream as we want to talk about them. But I think that's probably going to do it. We've used up a full hour, and I know you have more important things to do than stay here talking to me. I wish we could have had a drink. You know, if our time zones were synced, then we could have, you know, enjoyed a beverage together. But you're in the middle of your work day, so it's probably frowned upon on a Monday morning for you.
Well, here's hoping at TwitchCon. We'll see if it still happens. That's something we'll have to do then for sure.
It's saying that it's going to happen, isn't it? They haven't released any real info, but they said it's coming back in 2022. So I'll make every effort to get there. Thanks as always to everybody that has joined and supported and watched this podcast this year and commented and shared the stream. It's honestly been a great thing to do every single Monday. It really sets me up for a productive week. And it's been really great to be able to see so many of you enjoying it in chat and in the comments and Apple Podcast reviews and all those kind of things. I see all of those reviews and comments. So thanks so much for joining. I hope everybody has a lovely holiday towards the end of the year, if you celebrate Christmas or any other holiday, and a great new year. And we'll see you again on the 3rd of January for probably, you know, Twitch's first new feature of 2022.
We can hope. We'll see. And thanks for 50 episodes, everybody. We appreciate that.
50 episodes as well. Yeah. Go and show Ben some support on social media. You know, go and get his followers up because he helps out on the show every single week. And I couldn't do it without him, and I couldn't do it without you guys. So have a happy holiday, guys. I'll see you in the next one. Peace.
Happy holidays.